Today is September 24th, 2014, and this is episode number 273 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, geeky watch dude. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, and I'm still doing that up and down thing there, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. We like hearing from you.
We do. And that up thing, that's part of the rhythm. It's almost like you have turned our introduction into the opening scene from a musical.
Yeah, it's almost like that, except for it's just sort of even lamer. And I'm Brian Chaffin.
And he's Brian Chaffin. See? It totally works.
To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast,
shoot us a note.
This just isn't going to go anywhere good.
I don't know. I feel a Tony in our future.
Yes, that's true. And we do have a Halloween episode coming up.
Well,
I think we could frighten everybody if we sang it.
Oh, Brian, this is going to be awesome.
I promise we won't sing.
Buffy did a musical episode.
It's true, but Buffy has Joss.
Well, maybe we could too. Does someone know Joss Whedon, and can they get us in touch with him, please? And then he can help us create our Halloween episode for this year.
If he and his brothers want to write music for us to do a Halloween episode, we will oblige.
That one could actually be a video episode too.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord.
Oh, come on.
Oh, good Lord.
Come on. There are people that would pay good money to watch you dance.
Listen, we have three listeners, and we're gonna chase those three away if we don't move on. So let's talk about this gorgeous iPhone 6.
It really is beautiful, and I am very, very aware of the fact that I'm the guy that mere days ago was saying, camera bum, there's going to be the stupid lump on the back. Why can't Apple just make it flat? Blah. And here I'm going, oh, iPhone 6, I love you.
But you do this every time, man. Yeah, Apple's never going to do that. It'll never work. It's going to be ugly. They're going to hate it. There's no need for it.
If this iPhone was a girl, I would date it. Yeah, I know. That's how it goes. Every time.
Every single time. But I like the form factor when we saw the leaks, right? Mm-hmm. Leading up to the release, the form factor certainly looked nice, and I know that there were some people out there that were complaining about the lines, like the antenna lines.
Yes, Adam Christensen calls them the Tron lines.
Yeah, whatever, they're fine. They never bother me. No, they never, not even a little bit. But that's beside the point, because what I was going to say was that though I like the form factor, I love the rounded edges, I love the way the thing feels in my hand, just as I love the way the iPhone 5S and the 5 and the 4S before that, I love the way those fit my hand too. But the thing that's just killing me about the iPhone 6 is this display.
The display is gorgeous, beautiful, magnificent, poetic. What word, if you had to pick a single word, what would that be?
Amazing.
All right, that's a good choice.
Or gorgeous. I keep saying gorgeous.
It is gorgeous, and here we are waxing poetic on what amounts to a pocket-sized computer screen.
But it's true.
It really is beautiful. Now, I know that the effective resolution of the iPhone 6 is no higher than the iPhone 5S, but it doesn't matter because you can't tell that the pixel density is not higher. And what they've done with the way they put this display together, holy crap, it just looks fantastic. In my review, I said something to the effect of, I have caught myself looking at the display and for a brief moment questioning whether or not it's even real. Because it looks so good, it's as if someone went and did a backlit printed mock-up of a screen, you know, like from Star Trek: The Next Generation. That's how they did all the displays, and they always looked beautiful. That's kind of what this felt like to me. Like it was too good to be real.
It's interesting. The thing that I tried to put my finger on is how it. So it looks both. My failing here is I can't find the correct words to use.
They should have sent a poet.
It is darker and brighter.
The colors are richer and deeper, and the contrast is higher.
That is, there you go. That's so much better. We didn't need a poet. We needed a color expert.
I've heard it both ways.
And by the way, Jeff being the color expert, because he is in fact a color expert. But so these colors are just, like you said, they're richer and deeper in the contrast. Yeah, this thing just looks amazing. I'm using, you remember that orange star field that I was using on my iPhone 5S?
Yes, it's like a star field with sort of a cloudy nebula looking.
Yeah, it's thing a nebula where you can also see some stars. It was in the screenshots that Kelly put together for us in the what's on your iOS home screen piece, right? So mm-hmm. I'm using that same image. It always looked amazing on my iPhone, and I have it on my iPad 3 too. That's how much I like that one image. But I just can't get enough of it on my iPhone 6 because it looks even better.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's surprising to me that the screen on the iPhone 6 can look significantly better than the screen on the iPhone 5S. And it makes it clear to me that there really truly is a point when the resolution doesn't matter because it's physically impossible for our eyes to tell the difference. And I think we've hit our eye pixel density. So the screen is just... Yeah,
that's the entire premise behind the Retina display.
Right. But even still... so Retina display presumes that you are holding the device a certain distance from your eyes.
Yeah.
And so when you bring that device closer to your eyes, you increase the likelihood you will start seeing pixels.
Right.
And... I am having an extremely difficult time trying to find the pixels.
I can't, but my eyesight is also, my me saying that I can't doesn't actually mean much.
So it just occurred to me, I have a loupe sitting on my desk. Why have I not looked at this display under a loupe?
All right, why don't you do that while I talk about the fact that the graphics power on this thing is truly amazing too. Like one of my tests is when you do the flick pull down to do a spotlight search, which in iOS 7 was just called, I think, search. In iOS 8, it's branded spotlight search because Apple is bringing all of its search features together under the spotlight brand. But when you did that in iOS 7, it was fast, but it wasn't instantaneous. And when you do it in iOS 8, it was faster. Like on my iPad Air, flicking down is instantaneous, but flicking back up, there's a little bit of a hesitation. But on my iPhone 6, the flick down is, in fact, it's instantaneous. And the flick back up is just, you know, including all the blurring and stuff, is just smooth, smooth, smooth.
Yeah, it is. And I'm loving how smooth and responsive everything is. It's, you know, the iPhone 5S, and the 5 before it did not feel like they were sluggish devices at all. And the 5S still does not feel sluggish to me, even with a 6 in hand. But the 6 is just more fluid.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, so I've been sitting here looking at the display through my 8 power loop.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember how the display looked on the original iPhone, how we looked at it and we were like, wow, this is just beautiful. But you could pick out pixels, but it was just beautiful. That's what this reminds me of when I'm looking at the iPhone 6 display under a loop. Like, it's that same smooth beauty that we had in the original iPhone, but you could pick out pixels.
Mm.
So that's actually a compliment, because that display did look nice. By today's standards, it's very low resolution, but it looked good. And so to be able to throw an iPhone under an 8 power loop and look at the display and say, yeah, it still looks nice, that's really good.
That is really good. I'm playing, by the way, I'm playing Warheads, which is a Missile Command ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
Or a retro Missile Command. Anyway, it looks fantastic. But I haven't tried any of the like Infinity Blade.
Oh,
playing such games on an iPhone or not is not my particular cup of tea.
Still, it would be fun to see.
That's the right test to do. That's the right test to do. But in the meanwhile, I mean, this phone. So it feels good. It looks good. It certainly fits in my pocket. Of course, spoiler alert, I'm a man, so I do tend to wear man's pants.
Oh, well, yeah, this is awkward.
Yeah, sorry. Do tend to wear man's pants. I've got big pockets, but it fits in my pockets quite well. I bought the Apple leather case for it.
How do you like that? Because I'm thinking about getting one.
I love it. I also like the leather case for the iPad Air. You know, it's snug. It's form fitting. It protects. It's got the corners protected. It doesn't add. It's still thin. It makes the baby bump of the lens a less than it. I mean, it's complete non-issue. I think it was pretty much a non-issue anyway. But if it is an issue to you, it obviates that, as any case will, because the cases are going to extend a little bit past it, at the very least, a little bit past the lens bump. But I like this case a lot. I think that third-party case makers are going to find that Apple is very good competition for them on this. I mean, you know, it's not a Vaha case.
I wouldn't expect it to be.
Right, and it's also like less than half the price of it. You know, most Vaha cases. I think there's a couple of Vaha cases that start. Vaha cases. That's VAJA cases.com. They make gorgeous leather cases for Apple products and for a very few non-Apple products, and most of them are, in my opinion, gorgeous.
Every Vaha case that you've had, that you have shown to me, I have thought was absolutely beautiful. It was like wrapping your iPhone in a piece of art.
Right. And I had a Vaha case for the iPhone 3GS and for the original iPhone. And I also had their Motorola Razr case. They were the first people to figure out how to put a case around that very thin flip phone.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment. And so I haven't had a Vaha case for an iPhone since then, largely because they are, in fact, expensive. So my point there is that that company makes some of the best-looking cases on the planet, in my opinion, if you're looking for another case. Apple's case isn't one of those, but it's the next best thing that I've seen. And of course, it's a leather case. I've already got a scuff on it, But it's a leather case. Leather cases get scuffed.
Sure. And better the scuff on the case than on your iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I told some friends, like, all right, I got to go right now. I got to go get a case before I destroy this thing. Because yeah. I'm not known for, you know, taking the best care of my iOS devices.
You know, I have gone commando on all my iPhones. And with small windows of time where I do put cases on them, and then I always go back commando again. But this is the first iPhone where I feel kind of uncomfortable having it naked.
Why is that?
It's because it's a little bit bigger, and it's a little bit thinner, and while it feels comfortable in my hand, I have this hang up in my mind about it's going to fly out of my hand.
So I like the idea of going commando with my iPhones because they're such good looking devices, and it does seem a shame sometimes to not sometimes, it seems a shame to cover them up. Now I've had cool cases like the vinyl record.
Oh, who did that? Because that was such a cool case.
It was Griffin.
Oh, Griffin, right. Griffin
Technology. They were making these cases that had a plastic or a rubber bumper, and the back was this cutout from a single, from a, you know, a vinyl single, an actual record, by the way, that could have been played if it hadn't been punched up. And then they did the special ones with Third Man Records, which is Jack White's record label.
Right. Yeah. So it was like limited edition record pieces.
Yeah, I love those cases. I just love the idea of having a piece of vinyl, a vinyl record covering my iPhone. But anyway, my point is this. There are some very cool cases out there, and there are very practical cases, especially if you really need like solid protection, or you need to be able to, you know, waterproof your iPhone and stuff like that. But having a naked iPhone has always been appealing. I carry my iPhone around with me in my pocket, and I want to be able to at least have the option of not selling it when I when I get a new one.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, being able to recycle like that is nice.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're going to put a case on an iPhone, I think you could do worse with Apple's leather case. Now it's $45.
You could do worse with Apple's case or than Apple's case?
Than Apple's case. Sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted clarification because I thought you suddenly had a complete change of heart. I'm like, oh crap, maybe I shouldn't buy this case.
Yeah, sorry about that. So Apple's leather case is $45, which is pretty inexpensive for a leather case. They also do was it a rubberized one? It's a silicone.
Silicone.
They do a silicone. It looks fairly close to the same. I didn't try it. I looked at them in the store. The silicone one is cheaper.
Of course.
But yeah, you could do a lot worse. And don't get me wrong, there are some great case manufacturers out there. There's some case makers that are making some really good cases. I think, like I said, they're gonna find that Apple this time around is pretty good competition.
That's a good thing, because competition means ultimately we win.
Oh, of course, yeah. We as consumers absolutely win.
That's awesome.
But I think that my point is, I think that Apple's going to have a bigger share of the case market this time around.
You know, for the last three iPads, four mm-hmm. iPads that I've had, the cases that stay on them consistently are from Apple.
Yeah, fair enough. I tried a few. I didn't. No third party case survived for me. On my iPad 3, I ended up using just Apple's smart cover, the leather smart cover. And on my iPad Air, since they didn't do just the smart cover, I've got the again the leather one that fits all the way around the back and then has the flap cover.
And that's what I'm doing too.
Yeah, I like that one. This one fits a lot like that, but you know how there's a little bit of give in that iPad Air case?
Mm-hmm.
Right, not give, but like it's pretty easy to peel the either the iPad out from the case or the case back from the iPad.
I'm afraid every time I try and pull it apart, because I'm sure this is the time it's going to break. But yeah, there's a little bit of flex in it, but everything is like really tight and snug on mine.
Not on mine. It's like it's the perfect level of snugness with the removability. It's not going anywhere, but I can take it out if I want to. So, but Apple's leather iPhone 6 case is snug as can be, very, very tight.
Okay, so it will probably feel to me just like my iPad Air case does.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, and I can still keep it. I still keep it in my pocket. It doesn't add much of a footprint.
Okay, that's cool. All right, so I'm getting closer and closer to running out and buying Apple's case.
It seems pretty reasonable to me, actually. Yeah, $45. It's a pretty good deal. The question after Apple in the week leading up. All right, I'm going to start over. After Apple announced the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, and then leading up to its actual release, the big question was, which one will you pick?
Right.
And I am a person who is normally highly subject to buyer's remorse and like thinking that maybe I made the wrong decision. I should have gotten the other thing, whatever the other thing might be. And that has not been the case with the 6 Plus and the 6. I am more than happy with my 6 and very confident that the 6 Plus would have been too big for me.
You know, I typically don't have buyer's remorse with products like this. And I certainly have not had buyer's remorse this time around either. For me, there wasn't even a question ahead of time about which size I should go with. It was the 4.7 inch model. And when I got to the Apple store, because I had mine delivered to the store instead of shipped to my house, I got to play with the 5.5 inch screen while I was waiting for my iPhone to come out from in back. And I picked it up and instantly knew that I had chosen wisely and that the iPhone 6 Plus was just flat out too big all the way around for me. And I know your mileage may vary and different people want different sizes, but wow, it was almost visceral. I picked it up and was like, nope, not the right size, way too big.
Right.
So, okay, so apparently we're both in the smaller is better camp for the iPhone 6.
Yeah, I was fine with my 5S. Quite frankly, I would still be fine with my 5S. I would be fine with the 4-inch form factor. I'm not holding the 6 and going and thinking to myself, finally, I've got a bigger screen on my iPhone. But I have it. I like it. It's fantastic. It's gorgeous. Like I said, it's fast as can be. I've got 128 gigs of memory now, which means I can bloody well put all my music on it,
which is really cool. I stuck with 64 gig, but I don't use my iPhone as a primary music device, so I can get by with less storage because of that.
Right, and I do use my whenever I go out riding. Outside, or if I'm not listening to NPR, spoiler alert, on my in my car, I'm listening to stuff on my iPhone. So
sure,
it's always been important to me. And since I rip everything as lossless files, and I like carrying lossless files with me, my music collection is large in terms of storage. Even though they're, you know, there are definitely folks out there that have a much higher numbers of songs than I do. So yeah, I love the 6. I would have been happy staying with the 5S.
You know, I feel exactly the same. Had I stuck with the 5S, I would have been fine, but I'm really loving having the 6. I think where I would have had not buyer's remorse had I not bought the 6, would have been the first time someone with the 6 let me really play with their camera. Because that has turned out to be like one of my favorite features on the 6. I'm loving how responsive it is. I love how it's so much faster at focusing, and it does facial recognition quicker, and in low light conditions it performs much better for me. And then when you take into account that you have the extra options for time lapse and slow motion photography, it's just a fantastic camera, and by itself is almost worth the whole price of upgrade right there.
Well, so now a lot of other folks out there are saying that there's no difference in the camera.
And I'm quite surprised to hear them say that. As soon as I started taking photos, because I was walking around with an iPhone 5S in one hand and a 6 in the other, and I would take a photo of something with each. And with the 5, it was a much longer process. And when I say much longer, I mean comparatively, because we're talking about a few seconds for a photo as opposed to a second or two. But that adds up over time, especially if you're trying to get action shots. So it was immediately faster. But then when I started looking at the colors, I could tell the difference between the shots that came off the 5S and the 6 without even looking at the XF data.
Okay, so then where is the difference on where's the difference?
The difference,
because it's supposed to be the same mechanism, I thought.
There's an improved camera sensor in the 6, and so
it very specifically has a different sensor than the 5S.
I believe so.
Okay.
And I can see the difference in the colors. So that was great, because while the colors on the 5S, I think, have been good, or actually really good, when I look at the same shot taken with the 6, I'm like, oh yeah, actually, I can see the deeper colors that were lost on the 5S. And there are some shots that I took where I had like bright sunlight on a flower, and the 5S, the colors looked wrong and almost blown out. But on the 6, the colors were much truer.
And this is actually kind of why I made a point of mentioning that you're a color expert at the top of the show, because you are a color expert. You come from a one of your many backgrounds is is the print industry, where yes, colors mattered.
Which is why there's a loop sitting on my desk still.
Right. Yeah, it's not because you're a jeweler.
Right. I hope not. Yeah. excuse me. So when I'm looking at the shots, and this is not just looking at them on the displays, because they will definitely look different on the displays, because the colors, or the color reproduction is not the same from the 5S to the 6. So when I look at them on my computer, on my Mac, I can see the difference there too. And the iPhone 6 photos across the board were just better. So that was awesome. And then when I got into low light and night shooting, I was down on Pearl Street a couple nights ago, and I was taking photographs with both cameras, and it was at like 9 o'clock at night, and it was, I got great photos from both, but I just loved the way the 6 handled the night colors. And there's a shot that I have in my review of a restaurant sign, neon restaurant sign. And if you take a look at the comparison, you'll be able to tell very quickly which one came from the 6, because it's better. And for me, that was really awesome, because shooting neon lights at night with an iPhone has always been a really difficult thing for me to get to work.
Sure.
And now it's so much easier. I'm really pleased with this camera. And I've looked at a lot of the photos where people are saying you can't tell the difference. But man, sitting down with my two cameras and taking the same shots, I can see the difference.
Fair enough. What did you think about the photos from other people, though?
I saw a lot of really great photos. And
could you tell a difference?
In some, yes. And in others, no. But it's also... Okay, so part of the problem you have when you're posting a lot of these photos like this online is that, and this is something that I was trying to be very careful to avoid with my photos. It's just really difficult. I was trying to avoid having any sort of image degradation and color shift, and so the photos may look exactly the same on one person's display, and there might be variation on someone else's because you have no idea the quality of display they have and if it's been color calibrated and the lighting conditions that they're looking at the display with. So there's so many variables that come into play. And it's just one of those things where it can be very difficult to pick out subtle differences. So it would be nice to get to see all the original shots from these other sites so that I could really look at them closely on my display.
Sure.
Yeah, so there were cases where I couldn't tell the difference, and cases where I could.
Fair enough. Did you get to play with the 6 Plus and the optical image stabilization?
I did not, and I would like to be able to do that. My guess is that outside of low light conditions,
and videos,
and some video stuff, that I wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, fair enough. So now, in the meanwhile, we have a couple of, well, one possible black mark against Apple, and then one almost for sure black mark against Apple this week, and it just in the last Tuesday and today, and this is Wednesday. We're recording this on Wednesday, September 24th. There was the fact that people are reporting iPhone 6 Plus is bending from just being in their front pockets.
You know, everything is bound by the laws of physics. If this is a widespread problem, then that's a big issue for Apple. But based on the videos that I've seen, like you did an article where you showed a video of a guy like really leaning into it, like putting a lot of force onto an iPhone 6 Plus to bend it, and he did. But the amount of force that he was putting into that, I don't know if that's the level of force that you're going to get bending your leg. And
well, that guy bent, and this was Unbox Therapy is the YouTube channel/user who did this. He bent his eye. He was trying to see how much he could bend his iPhone 6 Plus. And he wasn't trying to. It was literally just that, like, I've seen reports that people are complaining about these things bending in their pocket. So I wanted to do a bend test, and we're going to do it right here on video. And he did. And he put as much force into it as possible using just his hands. So he's got his thumbs on the back, and he's using his fingers to press down. And he's putting a lot of force, as you said. And he's bending it more than people are complaining about them bending in their front pockets.
That's true. Yeah, he put a substantial bend into that iPhone.
Yeah, and he was able to do it with his hands, with his bare hands even. And the slight bends that are being reported from people just carrying them around their pockets, I have, especially after seeing that video, I have no problem whatsoever believing that's legit. And it seems like it's bending where the buttons are, because that obviously is the weakest part of the case, because, you know, part of the case isn't there.
And that makes sense.
Sure. It does. So, the very least thing that says to me, and I think that we would be surprised how much force we can actually exert just by having something in our pockets and sitting down and having, especially if it's jean material, it's very strong.
Sure.
Having that stretch and pull on your iPhone. I think a lot of people might be surprised at just how much force that can, you know, and surprised because we just, you know, it's just a part of life. We don't even think about it as we do it.
But that's a good point.
It does not surprise me that a device that large, that thin could possibly bend. What's amazing, of course, is the fact that the iPhones continue to work.
You know, that's an excellent point. After the bend that guy put into the iPhone 6, and it continued to work, and the display was fine. It was just bent.
It was bent.
But holy crap, he bent glass and it didn't break. Yeah, that was really impressive. I did find a video online of a guy that decided that he wanted to see if his Galaxy S3 would bend like the iPhone 6 Plus. And what he found was that he was able to bend it enough that it wouldn't sit flat on his table anymore. But in the process, it just totally shattered the screen. So he was able to put a very, very small bend into the phone, but the display just wasn't able to handle any kind of flex at all.
And to me, the takeaway from this is, if you're going to have an iPhone 6 Plus, put a case on it.
I think that's an excellent takeaway. Yeah.
And if you want to, and you may even want to consider getting a metal case that's thin, that could still dramatically increase the tensile strength of the form factor as a whole.
There's some really cool metal cases out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally, after seeing all this stuff, I don't know if, I mean, these things have been in the wild for less than a week. And there are millions of them, and only a few people are saying that they've bent theirs. So it's not like this is a widespread problem. But after seeing this stuff, I would not walk around with a 6 Plus without a case.
I'm with you. And even though I'm not concerned about my 6 bending,
nope.
I still feel like a case is a prudent move.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not worried about my 6 bending at all. Not, I mean, you know, I don't know. I doubt anyone could bend it with their hands. That's, you know, that wasn't some sort of freaky strong person. But I'm not worried about that.
So, Brian, if we ever come across a person that's like freaky strong, can I borrow your iPhone for a minute?
Nope.
Drat. I'll have to ask John if I can borrow his.
Yeah, ask John. I'm sure he'll be fine with that. The other sort of, and like I said, that this is possibly a black mark. I don't know that Apple has done anything wrong here. I don't know how many people are walking around with notes, Galaxy Notes, in their pocket. And I'm pretty sure you could bend a note too. I'm not positive on that, but didn't we see some people testing that as well?
Yeah, the same guy that posted the video where he bent the crap out of the 6,
uh-huh.
He did the same thing with the Note 3. And what he found was that he just really couldn't bend the thing.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, it's also thicker.
Oh, yes. It was definitely thicker.
So, that's always a trade-off with Apple and its quest for ever thinner. You have trade-offs. We've seen that again and again and again. Apple's constantly pushing the envelope here. So, all right. Well, this is a possible black mark on Apple's for Apple.
Yeah, it potentially is.
It really is.
Or it could just kind of fade away.
Yeah,
but
this isn't going to kill Apple by any stretch of the imagination.
Yes, that's true. And actually, I think realistically, regardless of whether or not this is a serious issue, it's going to hang over Apple for a while because that's just how it works. People love gloating over problems with Apple products.
Yeah, any perceived stumble on Apple gets picked up and magnified by both the outright haters and anyone who's just, you know, looking to looking to find the market leader make a mistake.
Right. And yeah, and so any little thing that Apple does wrong is going to get magnified, just like you said. In this case, it may be something that's big, and it will get magnified as well.
Right. Now, the other black mark this week would be today's release of iOS 8.0.1.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay, this is why I rush in where angels fear to tread. It's so that you, dear listeners, don't have to.
So... Who came up with the title? You or Kelly? iOS 8.0.1 update includes bug fixes, kill service.
Oh, that was all Kelly.
That's a great title, because that's exactly what it did.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's how this plays out. I'm recording daily observations with Kelly and John, and we're getting close to the end of recording, and I see the update is out. So I have Kelly start working on the article while I install the update so we can see what happens. My iPhone reboots after the update and it says no service. And so I'm letting Kelly know right away so that she can be aware in case it's more than just me. And I couldn't get my iPhone to hop back on AT&T's network. And then I started seeing other people were having the problem. And then I found out that my Touch ID didn't work anymore. So it looked like the cell radios and the Touch ID sensors were shut off.
Hmm.
And so
that doesn't seem good.
No. And so for the average person, what do you do? Because
panic.
Yeah, you panic because all of a sudden you don't have a phone.
Yeah.
You just have an iPod. So that was a big deal. So I'm messing around trying to figure out how to fix this problem. And I tried all the stuff that seemed to make sense. I did a hard reboot. I popped the SIM card out and popped it back in. And I killed all my network settings and put it in airplane mode and took it back. Nothing worked. And so... finally, the only real fix was to get a hold of the iOS 8 installer file, the IPSW file, and restore that. And for most people, that worked smoothly. For me, however, because why should it work smoothly for me? It wouldn't install initially at all. And then when it did, afterwards, my copy of iTunes refused to see that I had a backup.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah. So what I ended up with was an iPhone that was just as it was when I pulled it out of the box on Friday after getting it. But it's working again. And how are mere mortals supposed to figure out that they need to go find an IPSW file and which one do they need? And then how do you force a restore?
Yeah, like folks listening to us right now understand that you go to sites like ours. But it turns out that most people aren't listening to shows like ours and aren't reading sites like ours. We have a very connected audience. The entire Mac web... the entire tech web is a very connected audience, and most people are not connected, and they don't Apple immediately pulled that update. Didn't take long, right?
It didn't take long.
Like an hour. It was within an hour or an hour and a half before it was pulled.
Yeah. Yes. So it was pulled not as quickly as I would have liked, because there were far too many people that got hit with this problem. But it was pulled quick enough that hopefully a lot of people that otherwise would have been burned, like people that were at work and out running around and weren't in a position to install the update, they weren't affected. So what I'm hoping is that most of the people that were affected are people that are savvy enough that they could figure out to come to sites like the Mac Observer and see the how-to on getting your iPhone back to life.
Yeah, hopefully. And then hopefully Google does such a great job of indexing this stuff. when people go looking for answers, they'll hopefully find them. But you know, there were probably some folks caught up in this who are panicking legitimately. So, and don't know what to do. And I feel for them. And this is a potential black mark for Apple. It's going to be picked up far and wide. It is being picked up far and wide.
Oh, sure. And you know, it's going to be run with headlines about Apple bricks brand new iPhones, or you know, something to the effect of, that makes it very dramatic. And yeah. Well, and to a degree, it was really dramatic.
Because, it is really dramatic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really dramatic.
It's a good thing no one else was sitting in my office when my iPhone came back up, because the things that I said were probably not very gentlemanly.
No, probably not.
No, but you know, my iPhone's working again. I just now have to reinstall everything, which is kind of funny because I ran this iPhone as a brand new device all the way up until last night, and that's when I really started getting all my apps on it and all my settings for all my email accounts and, you know, getting everything just really dialed in. And then this morning it all gets blasted.
That's fun. You know, and well, I guess while we're on that, I believe that my problems is with iTunes, but starting with iOS 8 on my iPhone 5S. So this was last week before the iPhone 6 even shipped. I was running into the dreaded waiting for items to copy problem that appears to be tied to a corrupt or otherwise broken iTunes library. And I still haven't sorted it out. I haven't spent a lot of time on it yet, but I can't properly back up and sync. And it's really annoying.
That would be really annoying.
And it continued to happen with my iPhone 6. So, like I said, it's an iTunes problem. It's not necessarily an iOS 8 problem. But Apple has had a few users encountering this issue going back to at least iOS 5. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing definitive from Apple on how to deal with this.
That really sucks.
Yeah, it does kind of suck. We have a third topic.
We do.
Beats music.
Mm-hmm.
Beats music. There was the Verge? No, TechCrunch. TechCrunch said Beats music is going to be shut down.
Yes, it was TechCrunch.
And then. Recode said no, it's not. Apple said it's not, and then Apple turned around and gave them another update. Well, we might change the branding.
So okay, this goes back to what you have said time and again about rumors, which is, or at least rumors related to Apple, which is that there is typically some nugget of truth buried in there.
Yes, almost always.
Yeah, and I think this holds true in this case. And it's just that the nugget that was given to TechCrunch, and probably the explanation that went along with that nugget, was not completely right. So it looks like Beats Music is not being shut down, but the way it is given to us may be changing.
Yeah, well, it may change. It's not changing now, and it's not even necessarily... Like, It's. I don't think this is happening behind the scenes as we speak, but I think it's something Apple's planning.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
So it's interesting. Going back to when Apple bought Beats, Tim Cook said that. So he said that line about how like Beats Music was the first streaming music service to get it right. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
And you know, the reality is that even with Apple's enthusiastic fan base, Beats Music has not taken off since Apple bought it.
You know, it hasn't been that long, so
it's been long enough that if there was going to be an Apple effect, we would have seen it. TechCrunch had some numbers that said that 5 million people have tried the trial, the Beats Music trial that was introduced after Apple announced the thing, right? And wasn't there a free trial through AT&T? Is that right?
Yes, there was a free trial through AT&T, and I can't remember if there's anyone else, but yes, definitely through AT&T, and then the Apple one as well.
Yeah, so supposedly some 5 million people tried that, and only 250,000 of them actually subscribed. So I don't think we're gonna see an Apple wafer.
I don't think we are either. And now, granted, Beats was pretty small subscriber wise when Apple bought them.
Yeah, it just launched in January of this year.
Right, and so it was. I'm trying to remember. Was it like 2.5 million subscribers when Apple bought them? If that,
I don't know. I don't even think it was that. I think they had several hundred thousand.
Okay, maybe it's 250,000.
Okay, I don't remember specifically, but I didn't think it was that high.
All right, so but the point is, it was a small number of people compared to the other subscription services. So it's not like Apple was buying a market with this. They were buying services and technologies
and people.
Yeah. And they haven't really grown it that much.
No, and they said that at the time that Beats Music would stay, right? You know, it was going to stay Beats Music. It wasn't just going to be like have an iTunes label slapped on it. But at the same time, they moved the Beats Music CEO, Ian Rogers, over to iTunes Radio. And what TechCrunch is reporting is that Apple has moved other Beats Music employees to other projects at Apple, although nothing was specified on what those other projects were.
They're probably music related in some way.
Well, yeah, of course. Call it a hunch. And then we've got the dual statements to Recode. Well, the first is like, no, it's not going to be shut down. And then the follow up being, but we may rebrand it. And which makes a lot of sense. You know, maybe Apple wasn't ready to make a decision on whether or not to keep the Beats Music brand or to try to use the iTunes brand. But to me, the iTunes brand is stronger, and bringing that under the Apple umbrella is not only makes more sense to me, it's in keeping with Apple's traditional strategy of buying companies and incorporating them into Apple, not maintaining them separately.
Sure. And yeah, it could become iTunes Beats.
Yeah. Or it could just be, iTunes Radio.
Sure. And yeah. And it's not like this wouldn't be the first time Apple has bought a company and then kept the name of the company or the product. They did that. Well, a perfect example, Siri.
Siri, yeah.
Yeah. And but then they also do stuff where they kind of roll in a product and then give it a new name, and we've seen that many times as well.
It is true, we have, and we. I mean, like with a lot of the, Maps related services, those are being rolled into Apple Maps. They're not being maintained as separate services with their own name,
right?
Just as an example. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me that Apple would move Beats Music over to some kind of iTunes umbrella. But you know, there's another kind of, there's a related thing. Bono did an interview where he talked a lot about Apple. This was earlier this week, and he was asked why he worked with Apple for the Songs of Innocence promotion, the giveaway, the big bizarrely controversial thing where Apple gave everybody an album.
Yeah, I'm with you on the bizarrely controversial part. I was really surprised at how people freaked out about that.
And he said the reason why he's working with Apple, first of all, that he obviously had a close relationship with Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs, for many years. But in addition to that, he said that Apple was the one company that actually cares about whether or not artists end up getting paid.
Okay, that's a big thing right there.
Yeah, it is a big thing. And if you remember that piece, this was also TechCrunch that originated this, where they said that Apple wanted Beats Music in part because they were looking for a way to move from the digital download era to the era of streaming in a way that didn't kill the entire recording industry.
I remember that, and I found that to be fascinating.
Yeah, and so, like, when I was, before Apple gave its statement to Recode, I was in the process of writing a piece that said, well, you know, so much for that other TechCrunch piece where Apple was, trying to transform its iTunes business to a streaming model in a seamless fashion. And but it turns out that does apparently appear to be a big part of what Apple's trying to do. You know, rather than just making, Apple could probably do something to just sort of instantaneously gather all of the streaming business out there. You know, Apple has the money to do whatever it wants. Apple could make streaming free and just pay the labels. And I don't. It's pretty clear that instead of doing that, Apple is looking for a way to stay with the times, to stay in front of the times, but do so in a way that allows musicians to actually make a living. And part of allowing musicians to actually make a living includes the support structure that makes a lot of that music possible, i.e. the labels, record labels, record producers, recording engineers, recording studios, to make all those things, you know, to not just like destroy the money flow. And these are important things.
Sure. It's like responsible growth or responsible market change, as opposed to just coming in and doing as you please and let everyone else sort out the pieces.
Yep, exactly. So I guess we can probably wrap. We're running out of time anyway. So Apple, it looks like Apple is going to be, it is and was interested in the Beats Music form of human curated content for a streaming service, but they're in the process of rebranding that. So it's eventually going to be announced as some kind of new iTunes related service. And at that point, I imagine Beats Music would be canceled.
Probably. Yeah, and then if you have a subscription, that just gets rolled into whatever Apple subscription offering will be, and there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we managed to survive this recording.
Much to my amazement.
Much to your amazing. What everyone doesn't know is that I cut out a coughing fit where Jeff was in the process of dying, and I just let him go at it while I kept talking.
And it all worked out because you were able to talk and eventually my airway cleared.
But nonetheless.
All right. That's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. And hey, feel free to follow me on Twitter. My name there is Jay Gamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Yeah, so apparently I have a drinking problem.